An engineer, a tech idealist, and an energetic leader, our guest today is Yash Kandur. If you feel there's always a fixed path to success and you can't make the cut, talk to this guy. From studying chemical engineering in undergrad to a master's in mathematical modeling and optimization from CMU, he's currently an engineering manager at Mark 43 and the founder CEO of International Cricket Network, ICN 360. While the journey might look haphazard, there's a method to his madness. In this episode, we talk about a lot of interesting stuff with Yash. We talked about his learning on the job, Internet of Things, immigrating to Canada, ICN 360, importance of having a process, creating niche content and mental models to use in everyday life. This is an interesting one.
We are three friends who are talking and learning from interesting people working in various industries, sharing their stories and journeys so far. These are your hosts,
Hiloni Puladar,
Atit Kothari,
and Tapan Desai.
And this is What the Hat. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on any episodes.
So today we have Yash Kandur with us, and let's dive into our conversation to know more about his journey.
Hey guys, firstly, thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to be here. I've seen your season one, season two as well. Some really familiar faces, to say the least, who have been on the show. So to cut the long story short, the journey has been more like madness when it comes on paper to a lot of people, but there is some method behind that madness. I like to put it that way. So started with DJ, got into chemical engineering, and now why from chemical to where I am today? That's like a $1 million question, in a sense that if I got a dollar for every time somebody asked me this, whether it's interviews or people that I know or random people, I'd definitely be a millionaire. But yeah, so I started with chemical engineering by choice. A lot of people ask me whether my dad has a business or whatever. No, that's not true. Whether I couldn't get into computer science. No, that's not even true either. It's just that I always had a thing for pure sciences. And I think chemical and mechanical engineering come the closest to pure sciences. The others are more of an applied science. So that's how I got into chemical engineering. During the course at DJ, I mean, we were exposed to some really cool stuff. There were a lot of national level paper presentations, international. I actually got a chance to do one international paper presentation. So that gave me insights into what the world is doing, where the world is going. And that's when I was introduced to this world of mathematical modeling and optimization. And that just like blew me away. I took my first step in the final year with our project or thesis, whatever you call it. And it was very successful. So then I did further research, and on due diligence, I realized Carnegie Mellon is one of the finest programs when it comes to math modeling and optimization. I was kind of confused initially with the other admits. Like I had Cornell as an admit, I had University of Pennsylvania as an admit, and a few others. But I think I made the best decision of my life by choosing Carnegie Mellon. Not that the others are not good, but my experience at CMU was just brilliant. It was surreal to certain points. I don't know if I can do that again when it comes to the workload, but I think the learnings that I got out of that journey was one of the finest that I've had in my life. It was more of an eye-opening journey where you actually get exposed. I think that's true whenever you come out of your comfort zone, which is your hometown or your country. So I think that's true for most colleges, but it was a very holistic experience when it comes to CMU. So that was CMU. And then from CMU, again, when you come to the US, you realize how industries change. But 2 years is a long time. And obviously, software was always hot. I had a thing for finance because when it comes to mathematical modeling, it's again like pure sciences where it can be applied across the stack, whether it's financial services, high frequency trading algorithms, or whether it's just pure software architecture, or it's an oil and gas supply chain. Everything involves math modeling. So that's one of the motivations behind doing this as well, apart from the fact that math actually was a thing for me. So then I got into fintech. That was the first step. Worked there for 5 years. But while I was in fintech, I kind of grew within the software design and architecture piece because I started to realize that those things are so crucial to any new product development in this modern world. And today I basically lead the software engineering team here in a company called Soti. We basically do business mobility and Internet of Things. As a side hustle, like you guys know, I have an international cricket network, ICN 360. That's more out of passion. I know passion is a very loosely used term, So I am not a big fan of using passion, but I think it's really true. That's what, got me going. That's a long gist of what I've done.
How did you move? Like you said in the very beginning that you have methods towards this transition and to achieve wherever you wanted to be. Like the transitions are pretty steep. So how did you kind of manage to do those and still excel or do your best in those individual fields?
So I think there are two parts to it. One is the ability to be open to change. If you're open to opportunities, that's when you actually see them. I know it sounds more like a guru, but that's the fact. It's unfortunate that I speak like this, but that's what I've experienced. And the second thing is when you're open to change, automatically, I think it comes within you that you're really willing to go that extra yard or even that extra mile. Because like you said, the transition is not easy. It's steep. It looks very cool on paper when you see somebody successful, but there are a lot of failures that happen behind it. There are a lot of challenges. You get let down by a lot of people that you really trust. It's also a fact that you have a lot of plans in your life and we all feel our plans are perfect, but they never are because there are some other plans that are in store for you. And so a lot of factors, like I mentioned, but the most important thing is one is open to opportunity. And the second one is the willingness to work as hard as possible to actually achieve that. Because you know that you don't have the background, but you definitely have the ardor and determination to make it.
So for CMU, I had a question. Like you were talking about mathematical modeling. So what's the course about? Like what do you do?
So within mathematical modeling, what you are taught is how you pick up any process that happens in life. For example, you pick any process, like you pick an oil and gas supply chain, right? For example, even that can be represented in the form of a differential equation for that matter. And then that model can be solved. Now, how you do a supply chain is also like there are 100 ways to design the same supply chain, but then it comes down to what's the most optimized route, right? Everybody in this world works for what? One thing, that is profit. How do you make profit is you go by the optimized route. I'll give you a classic example. I think it was UPS. They designed this supply chain and then there were mathematical models built. There is something very, very simple that was designed in their path that got them millions of dollars of profit. And that was the fact that whenever a UPS truck is designed to take a route, they have to take a maximum number of right turns so that they don't have to wait at the traffic light. So like that's something that is so simple and basic, but it actually comes on the back of a mathematical model, which was designing the shortest path versus the shortest time. And that's when they optimized the two. So.
Yeah, that's a great example. I remember having like taking a course in undergrad about mathematical modeling and I hated it because I didn't understand how important it can be. But like giving examples like this, right? Like where there is actual real world application, you could make your business better. You could improve your margins. You could make your life better if you apply to like your everyday life. So I think that's a great example to stress the importance of mathematical modeling. Do you have any example in like where you use mathematical modeling in everyday life?
Well, I mean, it's not exactly mathematical modeling, but it's still mathematics, right? Like basic time management stuff that we do is pure math. Even like small things like how, especially in this world where we are all so health conscious and stuff like that. When you download apps like Healthify or what's the other one, FitnessPal, they come up with those plans for you. Those are all models that are built on back of some kind of mathematics where they balance your nutrients versus calories and stuff like that. Everything at the end of the day comes down to that. Like I said, pure sciences, right? It's either physics, chemistry or math in anything and everything that you do.
So what's your current role right now? Do you program these models? What do you do at SOTI?
Yes. So my current role involves programming these models and I apply these models to software architecture. So like I said, optimization is also a part of it. When it comes to algorithms, it's basically designing these models. My role is just a little bit more than this because this is too cool to work as a full-time job. I mean, you don't get to optimize algorithms and design softwares all your life. You still have to code them. You still have to deliver a product because that's what sells, not just the algorithm. So the role is more holistic in a sense that right from an ideation or an inception perspective all the way to production, including dealing with clients and the product management team. It's all of that encompassed into designing that product, defining the software requirements for it, the architecture and design, and then eventually moving towards working together in a team with 50% hands-on from my end as well. I work more on the GUI and the front-end side, the UI UX side. And then we have a team together that we put together the product and then ship it to production.
So are these internal products or it's like for some third party?
No, these are mostly third party products. So we build, like I said, we are an Internet of Things and business mobility companies. So we build products that help our clients. For example, FedEx is one of our clients. So is Coca-Cola. So whether when you are in those huge warehouses and factories, you use those rugged devices, the software that's on those rugged devices is the Internet of Things software that SOTI provides them with. They can use them to track. One of the classic examples I give everybody that's very easy to understand is FedEx. You have people delivering stuff to you and they bring those, it's called a rugged device, but you know, the school calculator kind of thing with a screen, and then you go and sign on that. Now that has a software on top of it, which detects a lot of things than just deliveries. For example, we track the GPS locations, we track the speed at which the FedEx guy is driving, because if he's driving more than 10 miles an hour, there will be no network connectivity, and so no calls will actually go back and forth. That's for enhancing the safety. If somebody is going off the grid, off the block, even by mistake, then there is a push notification that goes in and that informs people. And all of that is done by FedEx, a team in FedEx who just manages the SOTI application.
So you provide the software that goes on top of that rugged devices.
Yes.
That's interesting. I didn't know like that rugged device that so many things.
I didn't know either till I actually joined. And that was one of the reasons why I was so intrigued by what's happening. And it's surprising because there are not too many players in this competition and it's more like a niche. So I don't know if that's the reason why we don't hear more about it. But it was very intriguing to me as well.
What kind of tech stack do you guys use? Is it C, C++?
No, so the front end is basically Angular, JavaScript with Angular framework. The back end is C# .NET back end. And then obviously we have Mongo as well as Oracle databases depending on the product. But when it comes to like really low-lying code, then obviously it's in C.
I just wanted to ask, like, did you learn coding because you were chemical engineering? So did you learn it at CMU? How did you learn coding?
I think a lot of my friends will answer this, but I don't know, was it because of my orientation for math or whatever? Software programming came very naturally to me. You know, we have the compulsory or the mandatory first and second semester courses in programming. I kind of just like liked what I was doing. And then whenever we used to just like hang out with friends, I had a lot of friends in software, in computer science and IT. I used to like look at their books, and especially like, I still remember that course, the AOA course, the analysis of algorithms within computer science. And people used to dread that course. And that was something that just came very naturally to me. So I think a part of it was natural, but when it comes to a lot of software that I do at the enterprise level, yeah, you have to learn. I'll tell you a very funny incident. The first job that I got, I had no idea what Angular is. Like, I never heard about it. I don't know what front end is. All I knew was, okay, software. I knew Python scripting. I knew what the math behind it is. And I was told, you have 3 days. Here's a project. You have to build an application in Angular and give up. The first time I heard Angular, and I was in no position to say no. You know, like, it's very difficult to get a first job. He asked me, do you know Angular? I didn't want to lie, but I didn't want to say no. And I'm like, yeah, I always thought that he knows I'm from a background in pure engineering. So Angular is something to do with a geometrical library somewhere. I don't know. But then I realized that, oh, wow, this is a front-end framework. Like a lot of my friends, you all know Dhaval Shroff. He will go bonkers. He's like, you're talking these words. He was my roommate at Carnegie Mellon. So we know each other very closely. And it's like coming from the background that you are, why are you even talking these words? So he always makes fun of me. He's like, you took the hard route to get where you are. But I feel it wasn't really a hard route. It is more like a diverse route to get where I am. So yeah, so that's when I was like, okay, you have to learn. It took 3 days. I wasn't an expert in Angular, but I was able to deliver the project. And that's when I was like, okay, if you're willing to learn, I think you can get this. And that's why it's an applied science and not a pure science. You can't do that to chemical engineering. I ask you to learn something in chemical engineering, it won't happen like in a span of few days.
I can't just Google it and become.
Well, you can, but then you can't apply. That's the problem.
Right.
Wow. I think here we are, Tapan and I, both IT engineers and running away from coding. And then there's this chemical engineer who's actually found his way into the whole space.
Yeah, I think that talks a lot to our education system, right? Like, it's not doing the right job, right? People are getting, you know, like filtered into different streams which is not aligned with their natural interests. So I think that there is definitely some inefficiency there. Because I know a lot of people who don't have any coding or software background who loves coding, who are one of the best coders, and people who have traditional software, you know, who knows object-oriented programming principles, they don't want to look at a Visual Studio window. So, yeah.
I guess that's true. When you, with these 16, 18-year-olds, right, they are told that, okay, there are the two routes. Go. You want to be a doctor, you want to be an engineer, you want to be a chartered accountant, that's about it. But that's not just what, like, it's about, right? And then that's true. That happened with me. You won't believe, I wasn't given the admission in chemical engineering by a person in the admission committee at DJ. He spoke to my father and he's like, do you have a factory? He said, no. He's like, he's getting computer science. Why isn't he taking it? And I'm like, I don't want to. He went on a lunch break. I'm not even making this up. He went on a lunch break. He told my dad, you call whoever you want to. I'll give you 1 hour to think again about it. This is actually what happened to me at DJ. And my dad was shocked. He's like, are you sure you want to do this? He never doubted me till that point.
Right.
This happens only in Gujju colleges. Like, the ultimate aim is ki paisa banana hai, boss. Kaam karna hai, figure out karna
hai. Oh, man. Yeah. Are you sure you want to do chemical? I'm like, yeah, I'm sure.
You spoke about IoT and that's what you're doing. And there is, like, everybody right now talks about few technologies which are growing, which have been growing in the past and see a lot of future, be it AR, VR, IoT is one of those. So how do you think this technology is scaling, and, like, what has your experience been? What do you foresee for this specific technology?
So within IoT, I think, like you said, it's the hot topic, right? Everybody wants to talk about IoT. Everybody wants to be in IoT. But a lot of times we don't realize what IoT actually is. A lot of people are actually doing IoT, but they don't realize it is IoT because IoT has been marketed in that way. But when it comes to the growth, I think there is tremendous scope. One of the classic areas where you can think about IoT is aerospace. Aerospace is the next big thing. And also the second one is healthcare. So it's more aligned with the fact that, so when you have, like, elderly people, right, especially where I am, like, I'm in Canada, the population which is in their late 50s or 60s or even 70s is much higher. So that's a very lucrative industry. So it's all about having drones and then putting the software on those drones. And those drones can do a lot of stuff, like monitoring the current status of those elderly people, delivering prescriptions, making the calls to 911 just in case there is an emergency. Because the way the culture here or anywhere in most of these Western countries is, even if they are, like, very elderly, they're living by their own, right? So that's when you can easily apply IoT to it. And like I said, the next thing is aerospace. That's a little further away, but I mean, you know, the possibilities are endless, right? Elon Musk can make reusable rockets. Anything is possible.
So if you had to, like, explain IoT to a five-year-old, how would you, like, talk about it?
So with a five-year-old, you ask him, like, if I ask him, what's your favorite toy? He said, okay, my favorite toy is a car. So what makes a car move? So usually you have those cars which actually you pull them a little back and then they go forward, right? So what is it that makes that thing to go forward after you pull it back? That is what IoT is. That is the software basically that lives on that car that makes it go forward. Because the entire design is just a car. What makes it move is the software, which is the IoT behind it. That's how I would explain it to a five-year-old. I don't know if I want to explain a five-year-old an IoT, but yeah.
So one thing that I wanted to know specifically from you, since you have moved to Canada, Toronto, like a year back, what made you make that decision, and how does it impact what you were doing in the US to what you're doing now in Canada?
It's actually a great question. To put it in one line, I traded peace of mind for the American dream. If I want to put it in the most blunt way possible. So obviously each of these places have their own advantages. I had a Canadian PR that I applied for and I got it. And so permanent residency gives you a lot more stability. But again, with the US, you have more opportunities. It's like a high risk, high gain kind of scenario. But definitely, if you're looking at Toronto, Canada, that is more than just a backup. I did the mistake of considering it as a backup. It's not just a backup. I mean, if you tell somebody out there in the world that Toronto, Canada is my backup, they'll be like, oh, you are the blessed one. You are the chosen one by the God, right? Because everybody wants to get to that space. So a lot of people who are already in the US might be in a dilemma that should I go to Canada or should I not? Or maybe should I just wait it out? I mean, you can always wait it out, but it's not that Canada is like a walk-in, right? It's not a walk-in clinic. You just walk in and you'll get a PR here. No, it's a process. You have to apply, you have to qualify. So plan ahead. It's if you're in the US, you can call it a backup. It's a good backup to have. It is a stable backup to have. So you will have your challenges here. Do your due diligence, do your study, do your homework, and don't just like blindly follow what I'm saying and then come here and then like, hey, Yash, you told me I'll get a job. I'm not getting. So plan yourself, be smart. You've already seen a lot of life in the US, how it works. So Canada is not that different, especially in the engineering space. It's pretty much the same. It's actually been growing faster than Silicon Valley in the last 2 years as per statistics. So that is really good here. But like I said, peace of mind. So if you want it, I would suggest there are no insecurities or more importantly, instabilities when it comes to immigration. So Canada is important. The process to get there is called Express Entry Visa, which is your Express Entry Permanent Residency. It's a very clearly defined path. It's all based on merit and points. So there is no luck or lottery involved. I know a lot of people hate lotteries ever since they've been studying in the US and looking for a job. So yeah, I can see Tapan there. So I feel for you. I got it in my last attempt. My wedding date could not be finalized till 1 month or 2 months before that because I got an RFE in the last attempt of my H-1B. I'll probably hear about that all my life from my wife, but it is what it is. So just decide what you want. If you are willing to take the high risk, high gain approach, US is fine. But again, the policies change. So study that well. I think most important thing here is to study well. Make sure you do your homework. Don't just follow anybody blindly. Don't follow me blindly. Don't follow your seniors blindly. Don't follow your counselors blindly. Take advice from them, work on that, but do your due diligence because what you know from what you read is probably going to help you far more than what others are going to say because everybody speaks from their own experience and that will not translate to your own. So I think that would probably summarize. If you have any more questions, everybody's free to like, feel free to reach out to me outside of this podcast as well.
Just a follow-up question to that. There are a lot of people who are right now considering Canada as their studying option and directly taking their master's there and then the PR process gets shorter for them. Is that something that you recommend as well?
Sure. I mean, the universities here are really good. They are one of the finest universities in North America. Getting into a Toronto, like a Canadian university, is not easy. So people were thinking that, okay, I might get in there and PR is easy. No, that's not like that. Of course, PR will get easier if you study here, obviously, because you studied here. But as far as the education standard, because I've not studied here, but I've had friends here. I work with people who are a few of the smartest and brightest minds in the industry, and they've studied in a Canadian university. So I don't think that is as relevant as long as you're getting to study what you really want to. So decide what you want to study, choose Canada or America based on that, USA based on that, and then you can take the path forward.
Nice. I think that was a lot about your full-time job, but what I'm really interested in knowing is your side hustle, your passion. And that's the reason we also called you on the podcast because you commented on the contest saying you want to be a cricket commentator. So yeah, so like talk to us about ICN 360. How did you start it? And then how, I honestly am interested in knowing more about how are you continuing it with your full-time job?
Absolutely. There are a lot of questions there. So how I started ICN 360, like I said, passion, obviously I was interested in doing this for a while, but like we discussed our education system and how we are, this is not a career option, right? You go and tell somebody, oh, you know what? I want to become a cricket commentator. They're like, are you crazy? That doesn't happen. You do it on the side, like sit on the side. So anyway, I'm not complaining. I have no regrets. Whatever I did, I'm happy with whatever I did in my life. But I'm very happy for the fact that I'm actually able to do this side hustle. How it started is I was in the US. I was actually doing it for one of the other organizations. I was just helping them analyze games that are happening in international cricket. They'd started doing this to just keep an audience. So they tried out a few people. And because I was so interested, I anyway used to do it. I used to follow cricket very closely. And analyzing the game comes naturally to you, especially if you follow cricket and you're an Indian, everybody's an analyst, right? So that comes naturally to you. But I tried to add a little math angle to it, considering that I come from that background. I tried to create that niche in that surrounding. And I got good response from people. And then once that happened, I was like, you know, I want to grow. And so I requested the organization if we can grow. And they were not too keen on that because that wasn't their business model. And that's when we had the Caribbean Premier League going on in Florida. And I was lucky to be in Florida at that point. So I decided to just go and apply for a media pass there. Like, okay, I want to go in as a media. They're like, who are you? I said, okay, I'm a part of this organization and I want to go there. So I just thought that the organization will support and whatever. So I drove all the way to Miami. I went there. I took a chance. And then there I am, and I don't have my credentials. You're not allowed to go in. I'm like, wow, now what do you do? So, but at that point, it was 35 degrees Celsius in Florida, which actually feels like 40, 42. And I was all suited up because I was supposed to be the media, right? I was suited up. It was damn hot, but I didn't even think once about it. And then Alan Wilkins, I don't know if you guys know, a lot of people who follow cricket, they know him, or any sport. He's one of the finest broadcasters in sport. He covers the Wimbledon center court during the big games as well. So he saw me and he was like, he was intrigued to look at me. He's like, hey, what are you doing in this suit? Like, are you crazy? And I'm like, you know what? I'm from the media and I feel this is what I'm supposed to do. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's hot or cold. That's what you're supposed to look and carry yourself as. And he was very happy to hear that. You won't believe that's where it all started. And then he's like, you know what? I'm going to take you in and I'll give you an interview. But I won't do it in an AC room. I'm going to do it in the center of the field on a pitch, on a cricketing pitch. That was a dream. I would never think an Alan Wilkins interview in the center of a pitch on an international stadium without any credentials. And that's when I was on the show live and I just named it International Cricket Network ICN 360. The name didn't exist before that. I just called it out and I named it ICN 360. And that's how it started. And then people were like, oh, you got Alan Wilkins. And obviously support starts pouring in, right? That's like any startup. It's a very steep growth and then it hits a plateau. That's just the norm. You don't know it initially, but that's how it is. So, and that's how I started growing. I started doing those videos. I got a lot of positive responses. We actually grew from no followers to around 12 to 14,000 followers in less than 3 months. And that was like a boost. And then I suddenly started like, you know, success is very... I don't know how to call it, but it gives you that adrenaline rush, which is more like a double-edged sword eventually. But it pushed me to the limits where I was like, you know what, I'm going to go all out. I opened a YouTube channel, Instagram, Facebook. But obviously, you have to do one thing at a time. So we maintained Facebook as the main channel. And that's how we grew. And here we are today. It's been a while after that. A lot of things happened in life. I was switching countries, switching jobs. Learning new things. So obviously it's a side hustle. So it went on the side for a bit. It's still going on, but it's not as consistent as it used to be. We still reached 40, 45,000 active followers. So we are doing good. We did well at that front, but then set a plateau, like I mentioned. Going forward, the goal is to grow it in a sense that there are a couple of things I realized during this startup. I wanted to pursue it as a career. But there are certain things you realize that, okay, it's your passion, it's your hobby. You can make it a side hustle, but it might not become your permanent career. And that's okay for all the guys hearing out there. It's okay to know that your side gig or your passion will not become your career. When I started it, my tagline was converting passion to profession. But that's how you start. That's good. That's good for the initial motivation. But at one point, it's important to draw a line and be realistic because you need to have your life go somewhere. I'm not saying be bogged down. I'm saying be realistic. And that's when I realized that industry is so swamped with the ex-cricketers. There's their own fraternity that they have. And there's nothing wrong in being an outsider when you are able to do it. But sometimes you realize you're not able to do it. I actually covered the India-West Indies T20 games as a media personnel. There were 280 companies applied, only 19 got through, and ICN 360 was one of them. So it was a proud moment. And that's when I actually got this reality check. I went in there. I was actually in the Sony commentary box for like almost 2 hours, talking to Sunil Gavaskar, Sir Vivian Richards, Ian Bishop. Like, these are the big names in cricket. Like, people who follow cricket, they know that these are the greatest names in cricket ever. And then when you talk to them, you realize they're very honest. They don't have any ego. A lot of new players do, but these old ones who are legends, they don't have to prove anything to anybody. They know for sure what's happening. So that's when I realized that, okay, this is a side hustle. So now going forward, what I know I need to do is develop it into a website that people can actually look it up for content that's not available anywhere else. So you are a niche for the public. You're not somebody like an ESPN or something that everybody wakes up in the morning, any sport fanatic, and looks up. That's not happening, because that's not what you are. You don't have a team of 1,000 people. So that's where the next steps are. The next steps is to make it a platform to provide niche content. We already have like 4 people working for me. So they take, some of them take care of the social media part. Some of them take care of the website. There are a couple of people who write articles for me. So that way we're growing gradually. The end goal is to have probably a team of around 25, 30 that I think is a sweet spot. And then have a platform which has more website views. Email subscription is the next step to go get into, so that we have regular subscribers. But the moment I will be able to do that is when I'm actually able to ship consistent content. And I emphasize on that word consistent, is because that's the most important thing for me and ICN 360 going forward.
That's great. So you have a few people working for you. Are they working full time or on an ad hoc basis?
So I wouldn't say full time, but they're not ad hoc either. They work daily, so they're not ad hoc, but they don't work 40 hours a week on this. So they're more like part time, but still working every single day, because I mean, you want to ship some of the other content every day. With COVID scenario, it's been an issue that there are no live games. So it's very difficult to generate content unless there's somebody who is really willing to write from the blast from the past kind of thing. But even that kind of gets lame. If ESPN can see a drop down in TRP by like crazy amount of percentage. So that's what COVID has done to people. But yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So you spoke about your entirety of the journey, and a couple of things that I really liked is the realization that you had. A lot of people kind of miss it, that side hustle could not be a full-time career, and keep chasing it and then keep bogged down or have that curve where kind of they burn out with it. So having that insight is a very good thing. You also spoke about like regularly creating niche content, and in the space where there are already the biggest players who are regularly creating content, there are a lot of fan base accounts which are creating regular content, and there are these new companies like Dream 11 or in the cricket space who are also like continuously creating content, predictions, a lot of things. So how do you think that you would be able to create, or you are creating, niche content which probably these people haven't covered yet?
As far as niche content goes, like I said, with my background in math and I think for stats, I try to find those analogies that exist in cricket. So there is a difference between causation and correlation. But I think a lot of times correlation goes a long way when it comes to marketing this content. Causation plays a big role in larger things in life, bigger decisions in life. But when it comes to sport, correlation plays a big role. And this is one example. I'm not saying this is all about it, but this is one of the examples. And these are things that you don't really always get. And even if you get it, it sometimes gets unnoticed in between all the multitude of articles and the stars that these big players have. And so in cases like us, if we only ship that kind of content, people know that, okay, if I want to look at a content of this type X, we'll come to this website, and for everything else, we go somewhere else. That's how you create your brand and then move forward. It's like understanding not your limitations, but the limitations of the industry and growing where the scope actually lies.
So not to put you on spot, but do you have an example of how did your perspective from mathematical modeling, you applied it to commenting for cricket?
I don't think there is a direct relation between mathematical modeling and how I decided for cricket, but like within cricket, again, like within cricket, there are models that are that have been built. I mean, in the recent IPL, for example, when I did like a lot of those analysis shows, there were models that were built. They were not exactly predictive models, but there were kind of predictive models that were based on the fact that, okay, this team played against this team back in 2015 in the UAE, and that's how they performed. These were the players, but the conditions with this, there are multiple variables, and then there is one objective function is to decide who will win versus lose. And that's when you actually say that, okay, based on these factors and putting weights to each of these factors, I feel this person, this team is going to win. And that's how I send out predictions, which are based not just purely on current form, but also based on a multitude of other factors. Because I try to explain this to a lot of my North American friends, how cricket differs from baseball. I said the difference is the number of parameters that you consider in cricket are 50 if it's 5 in baseball. So that's how different the games are. And that's how convoluted the game of cricket is when you try to start getting deep and analyzing it.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, like the content on your blog, do you write it yourself or you some of your team members do it?
No, it's bits and pieces. So I do write as well. So there is an editor content that is what I do. And then there are a couple of other people who write as well. So we choose. Initially, it was only me who used to write because that's how I started, right? I didn't have nobody working for me. There was nothing that was involved. Nobody was involved. And so then we grew into a team. And so because I couldn't focus on all parts, videos are 100% owned by me because to be on camera and do stuff, not everybody is very comfortable to do with it. Luckily, I was able to find that space for myself. So I make sure that I do that every single time. And then when it comes to blogs, it's mostly those guys. And then once a week or something like that, I come up with an editorial content.
So how do you plan that, like with your full-time job, how do you give time to writing?
I think that's one of the most important things I've learned from this startup. There's one thing we always take for granted, and that is time. And there are two of the most important things that we that are underrated, that is consistency and discipline. If you have these three in your life and in your schedule, then that's when you are actually going to go and achieve something. Otherwise, it's always going to be a trying to catch up game where you're always trying to catch up. Even if you don't have a side hustle and you don't have these things in your life, you'll always be catching up at your work as well. So it all comes down to, like I said, time management. Again, a very loosely used term. It's one of the most rare, it's the rarest of the skills that is available out there. We all think we manage time really, but I don't know if you really manage it well. So yeah, time management. And the other one is, so how do you achieve it? Is through discipline. Discipline is again one of the most underrated things. Everybody talks about passion, motivation. I often say this to a lot of people, even the people who work for me. I tell them that it was your passion that got you going and got you to be a part of ICN, or even for ICN, how it started was the passion that got me going. But what's going to continue it growing further is going to be the discipline with which we do it and the consistency with which we do it. That's what separates the great from the good.
So what's your revenue model?
So for the revenue model, initially, we started off purely based on sponsorships. So we also cover live games, right? Like we do live commentary around. So we get local businesses to sponsor our events, and that's how that's one of the revenue models. Obviously, the other one is digital monetization, where there are ads. There are also customized ads from the sponsors. If they have a digital presence, then they allow us to market their content online, and that's how we make money as well. Going forward, it's again going to be digital monetization with getting more views per website. The reason why I emphasize on website is because it's like a one-stop shop. So you direct all your users to your website, and that's how you consolidate your user base. Right now, we have 45,000 followers, but they are across Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and websites. So that's not how you consolidate your revenue, like your users to make revenue. It's more about driving them all to a website. So currently, that's what we're working on. I think the website is almost there, ready now. The next step is to start subscriptions and convert that into the main platform.
One last question related to this. How do you pay the content writers? Is it based on page views or is it like fixed amount that they get?
No, not based on page view. It's based on like it's a fixed amount based on the number of hours they put in. page view would be something that will be nice for me as an owner, because but I think beyond just passion and motivation, there is something else you need as an incentive to do this job. It can often go as a very, very thankless job. To be honest, it's not easy to write blogs. It's not easy to, people feel that, oh, reading articles is well written. Okay, it's just a match report. Why not write it? There were a very, very few, very close friends who thought that way. They are like, ah, it's just a match report. I'm like, why don't you give it a shot? Try it once. It's not that straightforward. It's still storytelling, and storytelling is an art. It doesn't come for free.
I know personally a lot of content writers and content creators who kind of struggle with this whole thing. And if people think it's very easy to put out a blog or even a social media post, but there is so much that goes behind it to kind of make it worthy for a person to look into or even spend 2 minutes of their time into. So, and I'm sure Tapan would be a very good example for that as well.
That's why I was asking Yash about like how does, because I've been struggling to write my posts after I started my full-time job. And it, as you said, like consistency is very important. And like I started with passion again. I was interested in that topic, so I started blogging. Okay, my camera. But then like how do you continue doing that for like for a prolonged period of time? Because that's when blog starts kicking in, right?
And also, like, initially, all these passion projects don't have a monetary incentive, and it takes a lot of time. And even when you want to scale it, you're kind of not going to bring it. I mean, you're going to just distribute that so that you can scale it. So having that consistency and giving up on other things while you, because you want to chase that, it comes with a lot of sacrifice, which a lot of people miss out in the whole journey.
Yeah, everybody talks about success, right? Everybody talks about the end result. I think that's absolutely irrelevant in any journey. What's the most important thing is the process. You might fail, but if your process was right, it's fine. You can still go to bed happy that, okay, I did the process right. It's fine. It didn't work out. Everything doesn't work out the way you want. That's fine. But if your process is fine, you'll go to bed happy and you'll be like, okay, I did my bit. It's okay. And it doesn't come that way. I wasn't like, oh, it's okay. It didn't work out for me. I used to curse myself. I used to curse the whole world. I used to feel that, oh, the entire world is plotting against me. Yeah, I did that too. But I think you graduate to the next level where you're like, fine, as long as I'm doing the process, I think that's the most important thing.
Do you have like any principles that you apply at work, or do you have like a favorite mathematical model that helps you make day-to-day decisions?
To be very honest, one model that I follow and I think works in any business going ahead, whether it's my work or startup or anybody's business, is the people model. I think people matter, people skills matter, and it's all about people. Whether if you're building software, and when I say people, it's not only about the end users, it's also about people who make software. If we can empower the people who make software, you automatically empower your end users. And I think that's one of the areas that I'm actually looking forward to going further. Being a lead, I think I've realized that people, like I said, I will use the word people a lot of times, but I think that's one of the most important things going further. So that's one thing I'm exploring personally. There are a couple of really, really cool books that I've looked into, but they're specific to software management. But they speak about how important people skills are, interpersonal skills are. We always talk about the best coders in the world. We talk about the best ideators in the world, but we never talk about the best managers in the world. Actually, it is these people who drive your product. I'm not saying, not taking anything away from a developer, because I code myself too, but what you code has to reach somewhere, and that requires a lot of management. And that's why I don't call it SDLC, like the software development lifecycle. It's not a software development lifecycle. It's more like a new project or a new product or a new venture lifecycle, like an NPLC kind of thing, where people is one of the major pieces of that.
Yeah, and most entrepreneurs, at least for me, that was one thing I never considered as something that would become my full-time job. Like when you start an entrepreneur journey or a service-based industry or a product-based industry, you are focused on, okay, what am I delivering? What am I delivering to my end user? But later in the leadership role, you realize that your primary role just becomes managing the team who's going to take care of that delivery. And there is so much permutation combination out there. Every individual is different and their success drives your overall success. And knowing that early on probably could have helped me as well. There's so many learning curve you have in that journey to get to that realization.
And I think there are many more going further as well, I'm pretty sure. So yeah, it's never ending.
Yeah.
So what are some of the basic things that is required of a software engineer?
I think a few things that, like, I will mention the things that you should actually keep in mind as a software engineering professional. These are the things that I've learned over a period of time. One thing is being state of art is cool. It is necessary, but it's not the end. It's not the end of the world. What is more important is being cutting edge. You can be state of art today. You will go irrelevant in 6 months. That's how this industry moves, and that's how fast it is. So being cutting edge, and again, cutting edge is a very loosely used word. When I say cutting edge, I mean is keep yourself updated with the latest and greatest, depending on whatever field you are in, because it doesn't take too long for you to get outdated, but it takes really long for you to become relevant. So that's one of the most important things I've learned. The other one that I learned was question everything, never assume anything. Because out there, especially in the tech world, the possibilities are endless. I mentioned Elon Musk in my previous one of the answers. If he could build reusable rockets, imagine there was a point in the 90s when building reusable pen refills was a question that everybody had. This guy's come up with a reusable rocket for the world. So that's because he questioned, why not? Always question, don't assume whether it's possible or not. That's the second thing. And the third thing is, always remember, everything is replaceable, including you, your product. And I think that's how it should be for the better of the industry, the mankind, and even yourself. If you are ready to accept the fact that you are replaceable, your product is replaceable, you will obviously build a product with one of the finest user experiences. And then you'll also be open to grow because you know that it is irreplaceable. So that's the third thing which we always forget. That we think that we are irreplaceable. We try to make ourselves something that nobody else can do, but that's not true. That's never true. So do what you do the best, but never think the others can do it.
Well put.
We move on to our next segment, which is top three, and you'd love some amazing recommendations from your end. And it starts with which are the top three books that you recommend, and which is that one book that you have gifted the most.
First one would be Atomic Habits by James Clear. It's a very, very nice book. It's about how we all say that, okay, this is my personality versus this is not my personality. But at the end of the day, it's not the personality. It's the habits that actually turn into your personality. I don't really believe in the 21-day thing where a 21-day habit becomes your life, but still, like, your habits define your personality. Classic example, oh, I'm not a morning person because I wake up at 10 every day in the morning. Have you tried waking up at 5 for 2-3 months and see if you're a morning person or not? Probably you haven't. So that's the gist of that book. The second one is Hit Refresh by Satya Nadella. It's almost an autobiography by him. It's weird that he's still living and then still active career, but he has an autobiography. But that's a very nice book where he mentions his journey since his college days in Hyderabad all the way to becoming the CEO of Microsoft, and how at every point where he thought that there's nothing happening, he's hit a plateau or there is a downfall, he hit the refresh button. And that's why it's called Hit Refresh, and how things changed for him and he grew up in his life. Very nice book. And then the third one actually comes from my passion for cricket and sport in general. It's called The Winning Way by Harsha Bogle and his wife Anita Bogle. It's a book for management, but it's more about learnings from sport. It's not just essentially cricket. It's more cricket because of Harsha Bogle, but it's cricket and any other athlete. And they relate how an athlete can give lessons, the best management lessons to people in management in any corporate industry. And obviously that's the oldest book here that I'm talking about. So it's the most gifted book, the book that I gifted the most. So these are the top three books.
Yeah. I also wanted to know the software management books that you spoke.
It's called Managing Humans. I forgot the author name. It's not coming to me. He goes by the name Ranks. I can share that detail probably post the show.
Great. Next recommendation is about movies and TV shows.
Favorite movies. Probably Pirates of the Silicon Valley. That was a nice one. That's very geeky, but that was nice to know how two really ordinary people made it big in the Silicon Valley. It's about Bill Gates and Steve Jobs. And one of the favorite parts for me in that movie is how Steve Jobs is actually interviewing a guy at Apple. So that was good. The other one is The Pursuit of Happiness. Cliche, but again, one of the most inspiring movies. I don't think you can go wrong. Anybody can go wrong with that movie. again, one of the finest. The Shawshank Redemption is again one of my favorites. Again, a very nice plot, very well made movie. But I like to add one of the Bollywood movies as well. I don't want to sound like, okay, I only watch Hollywood movies. So within Bollywood, I would say one of my favorites has been Three Idiots. The way it's been made, the message that was conveyed, I think, was more important for me, where excellence is more important than a defined path. I often tell people, when somebody tells you there is this one defined path to achieve success in your field, that's not true. There are 100 ways to achieve what you want in your field. Just have to be willing to go for it.
Good recommendations. Moving to the next, top three podcasts or YouTube channels.
Podcasts. I started podcast very recently. So one is This Week in Startups. It's a very nice one where you want to know about the latest startups coming up, what's happening in some of the startups you heard about in the previous podcast episodes. Also about one of the greatest or the weirdest ideas that are out there and how people are actually making them into a business model. That's very cool. The other one is because I'm working towards leadership and wanting to get towards people management. It's called the Look and Sound Leadership podcast. It's about giving leadership lessons to people who want to get into leadership and giving coaching tips to people who are already in leadership. So that's the second one. And then the third one is to just get away from all the work. Want to be happy. It's called the Happier Podcast. Just listen to them. You'll feel happy. It's all about happiness in your life, in your personal relationships, tangible, intangible, living, non-living relationships that you have, and most importantly, your relationship with yourself.
Good recommendation. Never heard of any of the shows, so I'll just check them out. Yeah,
I'm gonna put them on my list. Couple of things I'm also trying to grow into. But the Happier Podcast, that sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, it's something apart from people talking about work and business and money, so that's good.
Yeah, I mean, everybody eventually is chasing happiness. Like, whatever you do, wherever you go, that's the end goal for everybody. Awesome. Top three things that you learned starting your own side hustle or a startup.
Okay, the first thing would be inspiration can come from anywhere. A smallest thing that you see on a refrigerator in a kitchen can give you an inspiration, while something absolutely massive can give you an inspiration. So you getting inspired is up to you. What inspires you can be anything as irrelevant as what one might think. So inspiration can come from very funny places. That's one thing. The other one is you will never be fully ready, whether it's an interview, whether it's a product, whether it's yourself, whether you're marketing anything, you will never be fully ready. You attach a timeline to yourself, you attach a bunch of goals you want to achieve, and that's it. There will always be something else that can get added upon. It's very important to draw a line and add that as an improvement or a new feature in whatever product or a service you're building, because otherwise you will never hit your timeline or never hit your deadline. So knowing that you will never fully be ready as a person or a product or a business is very important to know. And the third one would be defining a problem, I think, is very important. It's more crucial than actually the solution. One of the classic examples I give everybody is how artificial intelligence and machine learning works. Everybody wants to do AI and ML and wants to apply in any and every other business. But the problem is they don't know what the problem is. You have all the data in the world. Applying machine learning is like 10% of the job. 60-70% of the job is identifying the problem. The other 20-25% is probably cleaning the data that you have. And then the 10% is the ML cool stuff that people talk about. But I think most important thing is defining your problem. Know what your actual problem is and what solution. And then you can define a good solution. The solution will only be as good as what your problem is. So define a problem.
So thank you so much, Yash. It has been great having this conversation with you, knowing you it is possible to have a side hustle with your full-time job, knowing that it's okay to switch your career whenever you want at whatever time, and there is a possibility that you would still excel at it. And it's not just it's not an easy cakewalk, but hard work, discipline, determination, and the focus on your plan would make you achieve it.
Thank you so much, Iloni. Once again, thank you guys for having me here. It was actually fun. There's a lot of nice talk that we had. I hope I didn't sound too much like a Baba. I know a lot of my friends will not like it. They still are friends with me, so I guess that's okay to be a little bit of a Baba. It probably helped them somewhere down the line in their lives. So, but again, thank you very much for having me.
that's about it, folks. We will be back next week with another guest and another story. We would love to hear your thoughts about the episode. Feel free to reach out to us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. You can just search What The Hat Podcast. Also, subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Castbox, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcast from, so you never miss out on the next episode. This is Hiloni, Atit, and Tapan signing off, and this was What The Hat.